We got very lucky last time.
You don't always get lucky with such things.
The number of episodes we've re-recorded is still an embarrassment to me.
Even Do you think it's only two or three?
Yeah. But it's mortifying.
Yeah. Do you take it as like a personal failure?
Yes. I have to go and flagellate myself in a corner.
See, I don't. I just must put it down to you and then just move on.
Yeah, I suppose. Fair enough. It's a fair cop. The worst case is we can include some of our whimsical yet eccentric.
Well, it's often that you think, have I got any announcements? And then you rack your brains and you can't think of any.
Not until afterwards.
Yeah, exactly.
That's when most announcements may be thought of.
Yeah. But actually, there generally is. I guess it's like the question, what have you been up to recently? And you say nothing, really. But that's never true, is it?
Go to work, coming home, go to work, coming home, go to work, coming home, go to work, coming home.
Yeah. Or just staying at home.
Yeah. Working at home, stopping working at home. It's not quite the same cadence, does it?
Yeah. Well, I don't mind announcing that come the end of April, I'm going to be a free person again.
No longer a number.
No longer a number. No longer a number in a company. So I get to return to my feckless ways.
Excellent.
Yeah. Full-time employment may not be for me. I like employment, but probably under my own terms rather than someone else's terms is where I'm leaning at the moment.
Well, now is our opportunity to say, after May, give Ash money, people, and he'll come and do wonderful things for you.
Yeah.
I won't specify what they are because obviously it's not for me to say, but I know they'll be wonderful. No comment on that.
No. Well, you know, life being what it is, one's record is sometimes sketchy. I try my best.
Well, no one's paying you for your jokes, so you'll be fine.
That's true.
Wisdom on quality.
If you want quality-related services, I'm not the person for you. If you want testing-related services, then I am the person for you.
So what's the difference?
Well, testing can't, you know, no one can assure quality on their own, can they?
Well, I suppose you're right, because they might discover they have to change something and then they'd be doing something different.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, we should break the link between testing and quality assurance, I think. Quality assurance is more of a team sport.
And while we're pressing Ash's button, I'm tempted to ask how much testing is enough.
Well, that has an easy answer. Testing, there is no enough testing. Testing can only stop, and I can stop whenever you want me to. If you just say stop, I'll tell you what I have covered, what I haven't covered, and what risks still remain. And then I'll, I don't know, go to the pub.
It's almost
and
like,
leave you to make the decision.
It's almost, Ash, like you've said these words before.
I have.
They were very fluent.
I have.
It was very fluent.
I have. At a previous role, they said I was the equivalent of a testing game show host.
And you've actually been a testing game show host.
I have been a testing game show host in the past, yes. And I can just trot out the cliches about testing at will.
At will, yes. No further thought required.
No. So I think the quality engineering angle is one for another episode because there's a lot there.
Is that a thing?
I think that's a thing.
We can't talk about things until we talk about the things.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think you're right.
So, and if we did a quality engineering thing for this episode, then it would just be me with a tirade, a very long internal monologue about the problems with quality engineering.
Don't you mean a very long, insufficiently internal monologue?
External internal monologue. Yeah. But back with the external internal monologues again.
The old jokes are the best.
Please see episode 3, probably, something like that.
Yes. Which was so long ago that we chipped it into stone tablets.
I think it was Ian's external internal monologue on artificial intelligence.
That sounds like the kind of thing I would have an external internal monologue on.
Yeah. Oh, the other thing as well, I have to back up the point of when you say, what have you been up to recently? You say nothing much and it never being true.
Yes.
I've been doing the 30 days of AI in testing by the Ministry of Test.
Oh.
So it's lots of interesting exercises around how you can use AI in your testing work, plus how AI influences your testing work. So it's very, very thoughtful stuff.
So there's no how to test AI?
No. No.
Is that a thing? Or is that just the same as testing everything else?
Well, actually, I've just told you a complete lie. There is. There was a couple of sessions, there was a couple of talks by testers who are actively involved with testing generative AI. And they talked about how they did it. So that was, it has a bit, I would say it's more using AI for testing, but it's somewhat testing of AI as well.
So we've had some bold claims in the past about using AI for testing, haven't we?
Oh yeah, yeah. Quality engineering.
There were some companies coming along with significant claims.
Yeah.
And employing significant people who then left.
Yeah, yeah. There's been some really interesting bits. I tested the Postman, which is an API testing and API building application.
Not the person delivering the mail.
And they have Postbot, which, you know, fits quite nicely, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Has a nice little icon and everything. And while using it to generate tests and documentation and assertions and things like that, found some pretty interesting behaviours, bugs, weird ways that it didn't really explain what it was doing and did it anyway. So it kind of like lent into the problems with like lack of transparency of how a model is doing what it's doing.
Yeah.
Which I think has been one of the things that's really struck me. But also, the other thing that I've been doing is looking into prompt engineering and how to do it well and how to structure them and how to ask in the right way. And that's been really cool. And it's actually improved how I interact with Claude.
I'm liking new Claude.
New Claude. It's actually improved how I interact with Claude on a regular basis. So yeah, it's been really cool to dig into it a bit deeper.
I suspect we've got more to say about AI, even though we already just talked about it last time.
Could do it every episode, but yes. There are other things that we want to talk about.
And invite ChatGPT to come on as a guest. I feel as though that would be seamless. Now I really want to do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm trying to think if I've been doing anything interesting recently, but I've been doing
lots of things. You can't answer that question.
Lots of things that were interesting, but they're all basically to do with AI. And going on a diet, that was quite interesting to me because I quite like to be thin. But, you know, that seems a bit off topic.
You're trying to turn your son into a developer as well.
Yes, I am. Well, to be fair, he wants to turn into one. So I'm not doing that parental thing of saying,
not coercing
you must be in my own image. Try to avoid that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Things.
I think it's my turn to talk about a thing first this time.
So, Ash, what is your thing?
So my thing this time is about TikTok. And in the US, a bill has been passed, I believe.
Yeah.
When I first wrote the notes, it was still being talked about. But now I think it's actually been passed to say TikTok must either sell itself or ByteDance, the parent company, must sell TikTok to a US entity or they will effectively be banned from operating in the United States. So
are you on TikTok?
I'm not on TikTok. Full disclosure, I'm terrified of TikTok.
I'm very disappointed, Ash, because I was hoping I could sign on to TikTok and see some funny dances.
What it's for?
Well,
I thought it was a gigantic data hoover.
Yeah, I think it probably is, yeah. To be fair.
Should I say Hoover or vacuum cleaner?
I think...
Because Hoover is a brand name, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
So,
and until they sponsor us...
Weirdest sponsor ever.
Until they sponsor us for no apparent reason, they can just do without their name being mentioned.
Yeah. So TikTok has been in my mind, well, not enough to actually sign up to the service, but in my mind for quite a long time since I read a post about like its proclivities for gathering your data and its like wild insecurities as well.
I think I also read that post because I have a clear memory of feeling that same feeling that you're describing and then deleting the app.
Yeah. So at that point, whatever lingering desire I ever had to install TikTok was then absolutely scared the bejesus out of me. And I was like, no, I'm never going to install that application.
I think it's a bit redundant now, isn't it? Doesn't everybody automatically record all of their TikTok content also onto Facebook Reels and YouTube Shorts?
Right, and Vines. Do you remember Vines?
I liked Vines. I made some Vines.
And where it all started.
Yeah.
Possibly.
They were real short, though, weren't
yeah.
they?
Yeah. Yeah. So to me, the big question is around the like the fears around the why this vote has happened, as in ByteDance are a Chinese company and TikTok is an enormous data vacuum cleaner. So the worry, whether founded or unfounded, is that data would make its way from the United States and be, you know, used in China for whatever purposes they believe it might be used to sort of threaten national security. But from what I've read, there doesn't seem to be any evidence that this has happened, although apparently some data is, for like content moderation purposes, is shipped to China, is accessible from China.
Mm.
So there are, it's a slightly murky one. The more you read, the more it kind of contradicts itself a little. Because to me, there's like a few levels going on. You've got like the national security bit, then you've got a very low level, like personal security, personal privacy aspect to it as well. So there's something sort of slightly dark to me about TikTok, or maybe dark is the wrong word. Maybe it's like opaque about what it's really for.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the data thing is interesting. And I we'll find that article somewhere. We'll try and find it and link it in the show notes, because it really was very sobering to think, you know, the amount of stuff they were collecting. And Apple, particularly on iPhones and stuff, tries to manage what data things have got access to, and they have to declare the data that they use. And even their declaration is alarmingly long.
Yeah.
But even if it weren't, even if it weren't so long, they were collecting things they're just not allowed to collect at the time of that article. Yeah. I imagine Apple has closed more and more loopholes over time. And I'm sure that the similar sort of process is happening on Android via Google's process. But yeah, it's extremely invasive and intrusive.
Yeah. So here it says, a quote from one of the articles that we'll link: TikTok collects personally identifiable information that includes users' name, age, email, phone number, social media account information, collects digital data such as payment methods associated with transactions, social network contacts, IP addresses, geolocation data, and device information. And it collects biometric identifiers and biometric information, including face prints and voice prints, from uploaded user content. So that list is scary to me.
I think this is quite similar to what Meta has historically anyway done.
Yeah.
I think that the obvious key difference is that it's a foreign country that doesn't share our values.
Therein lies the contradiction, isn't it, about the vote itself. So it's like, well, actually there's probably plenty of US companies who do something very, very similar, like say Meta being one of them, but the fact is that it's a foreign power which I'm not on the greatest of terms with, makes it a very different proposition. That's the other layer that we all, especially as technologists, we feel a bit embarrassed when you watch like those hearings.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Because like, and then you have to watch Mark Zuckerberg just acting very strangely and, responding to the same questions. It's like, you know, can, I don't know, YouTube see into, you know, whatever. Can Meta see into the contents of my sock drawer?
It's a bit, is magic true?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, there's no doubt that Meta have got a lot of data and they've been very good at comprehending it and understanding it and making sure that they extract every ounce of possible value from it. And so, you know, they do know a frightening amount about anyone that uses their systems, which includes WhatsApp, Instagram, and Facebook straight away. So, you know, in this country, WhatsApp is very popular. I wonder how many people realize it's a Meta product. But you kind of, their data mining, while it's in many ways offensive to some people, and including me, I'm very uncomfortable with it, really.
Yeah.
But I don't see it as threatening in the same way as I did TikTok, even though it's largely the same behaviours because of the association with the... And that kind of raises all these questions about, is it okay to... Is it okay to... Because it's kind of one of these free speech... I'll get to the question. It's one of these free speech things, isn't it? Where you get free speech absolutists who will say free speech is more important than anything.
Yeah.
And then you get people who start to say, with some justification, you know, this kind of speech causes violence to people. And it's kind of, should we do stuff should we use the powers that we have to limit Chinese social media, which is what TikTok arguably could be said to be,
yeah,
in Western society? I mean, what, because they have, in China, there's no Facebook or yeah. I'm trying not to say Twitter, or you know, they've banned all of the sort of UK, they've banned all of the Western social media companies.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the stink that's been kicked up when we, you know, in the West try to ban one of that's owned by them is a bit weird, isn't it?
Yeah. I think in some ways we're not used to our governments exercising any power over private organisations. Not to this extent anyway. It's like, oh my God, we legislated against something and might actually do something about something. So I think we're slightly...
steady on there.
I know. We're used to our government, especially with tech companies as well, because it's usually like with a good side order of like toothlessness, isn't it, that we deal with them.
Mm.
What was interesting to me as well, so TikTok asked their users by a message in TikTok, I assume in the app, the notification, to vote against a ban and vote for... maybe not vote for people who were voting for the ban in Congress.
It's one of those contact your congressman kind of things, isn't it?
Yeah. So, but isn't that exactly why they want to ban it in the first place? Because, well, you have like a political... You're trying to influence for political ends.
I think that is exactly why they're trying to ban it in the first place. I mean, that's the other thing, isn't it? That actually, more even than the data harvesting, is the potential influence that the algorithms that select what you see on TikTok operate. So the Chinese government might be able to influence those algorithms so that people using TikTok can see only the political things that the Chinese government wants them to see.
Yeah.
And doesn't show them things it doesn't want them to see. I mean, that seems actually even more sinister than the data harvesting.
Yeah. Yeah, because I suppose it's one of the other things that I found quite interesting as well is that you've got sort of entire businesses and careers based on TikTok, you know, which would be under threat.
They would.
Again, it's like a layered question, isn't it? So you've got your personal privacy, I should say. I was going to say privacy, but that's not how you say it. and then you've got national security, and then you've got, like, how deeply embedded, well, all social media is, but where the threat to ban it actually causes a real, like, economic shock, if you like.
Yeah.
So there's so many layers to this. It's quite incredible. So there was one other, like, solution that was floated, is that the data is actively hosted in the US, so it could be subject to the same rigor as any other data center hosting in the US. So, because I know that lots of political organizations are uncomfortable with where data is held.
Yeah.
So, like, I think the EU gets
really,
like, frosty with Facebook because the data goes off to the US from Europe, and, you know, all. So it's like there's like depth to the question of like where the data is held as well, because I think I guess that has like the ability to influence how it's used as well, doesn't it? So
yeah, well, it influences the laws that govern it, doesn't it?
Yeah. So, you know, in a lot of countries, I guess data protection laws similar to, you know, you only live once. Just spray all your data around and everyone else's and don't worry about it.
Yes.
Whereas obviously in the EU, they take it.
USB stick.
Yeah, leave it on the train.
Some poor civil servant in this country did that and will probably never live it down because we're still reciting it 15 years later.
And the other angle as well, which I, from a bit more reading, was in the public and the private sphere, it's viewed slightly differently, as in, well, so private individuals tend to be a bit more like, I know a few people, and this is obviously anecdotal, who are a bit like, well, I've signed all my data away anyway, so I'm not too worried about it. Whereas in, say, in like the, well, whatever, the public sector, the civil service, whatever the civil service is called in the US, lots of companies have started to ban having TikTok on devices.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a bit of, it's already kind of partially happening anyway, in a lot of ways. And also that kind of speaks to, there's something interesting about that, you know, if you have on a, if you have your work device, which possibly has personal accounts on it, and the blending of those two worlds, it's hard to keep them separate as well, isn't it?
So, yeah. And it's a massive pain when you suddenly go into two devices.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that, this sort of ban or, you know, sort of edict about who should own TikTok, is, it's kind of been rumbling for quite a long time. So I've quite enjoyed like following it, following along, and also like seeing it sort of finally come to a head. And the other thing that I found horrifying was that a chap called Bobby Kotick, who used to be the CEO of Activision Blizzard, by all intents and purposes, not the nicest chap in the world. He would be interested in owning TikTok.
For the Americans in our audience, that was British understatement.
Well, you know, there are more horrible people, I'm sure. But
one or two, yeah.
So I'm not certain that if Bobby got his hands on it, we'd be in a better position than we are right now.
I read somewhere that Donald Trump, who threatened to ban it when he was president of the United States, has now reversed his position on it.
Of course.
And in an unconnected...
non-political unconnected opportunist. News,
A billionaire who already owns some of it has been donating money to him.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, those stories are adjacent, but obviously completely unconnected. Although,
just those stories give each other the side eye every now and then.
Possibly, yeah. let the lawsuits begin.
So yeah, that was my thing.
I think that's a really good thing because it does raise these such interesting questions. How much is it okay to ban things that people like because they might let foreign governments have influence over us?
The depths to which social media influences life, and then the powers of what the actual powers that government have. There's like an interesting sort of comparison there, isn't there? Because it's rare that governments will flex their powers in terms of private organisations in order to say, you know, they need to be banned or acquired by a US entity at the expense of their own, you know, the freedoms that their citizens enjoy. So it's a really interesting, scenario, which I don't think comes up all that often.
I think I'm coming down on the side of we should defend our values, you know. And China defends its values by not allowing Facebook, etc. in China.
Yeah.
You know, why can't we defend our values similarly anyway?
Yeah, but how will you watch people doing funny dances? Or trying to climb reels, pyramids of Ash, crates?
Reels.
Reels. Ah, right, okay. And
YouTube Shorts.
I'm also scared of YouTube Shorts because I watched them once and then about 20 minutes later I was still there.
Yes.
And this is the real doom of TikTok for me.
Yes.
One part of my irrational fear of it is that I don't want to just disappear into that particular rabbit hole.
It's been highly optimized for the human brain so that it's like sugar and some other things. Yeah. It's just, it's exactly what some part of our lizard brain or whatever wants.
Yeah. As a technology person with an interest in products, sometimes I have admiration for the what they've actually achieved. But that doesn't mean that I think it's a good idea, that I can separate the two.
Yeah.
I can say, okay, you've created this strange entertainment machine, which could like have everybody staring at it forever. But also you shouldn't do that. I don't think that's a particularly good idea. It doesn't lead to a very happy and fulfilling life.
And it's a shame because there was such creativity and young people doing interesting creative things on it. You know, it's a difficult one.
Yeah, definitely.
That was a very good thing. Thank you, Ash. I too.
Can I get a drink first?
Have a thing. And you can get a drink first, but not that gin that you're currently sipping.
It's just a litre of gin, Ian.
Yeah. As the podcast becomes more and more like a party for the ears, I'm going to get a drink as well.
Let me switch to your thing, Ian. Ian showing his agility there.
In Dungeons and Dragons terms, I think my agility is about 4 out of 18. Eventually, I'm going to have to do yoga. I know it.
If you roll the dice, then you will not pass the agility check.
I have to roll a very high number to pass the agility check.
And put all your modifiers on it.
Yes, yes. I have to wear my, you know, special trousers of something.
Trousers of the powerful leap.
Yes. That sounds like the kind of trousers that I need to wear.
That section writes itself, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
The trousers of the powerful leap.
Well, it is a leap year.
And one day to use those trousers. Forgot to put them
Damn,
on.
Damn, missed it. Wore the wrong trousers, which brings us to Wallace and Gromit.
It does. It does. It all returns there.
It's not my thing, Wallace and Gromit. I will say that this has been a bit of a thematic episode.
Thematic?
Because we're not straying from social media. We've talked about a thing about social media, and now we've got another thing about social media. What I wanted to talk about, which made it kind of inconspicuous in our show notes, is X.
I thought Ian had just put a kiss on there.
Now, that would be an emoji these days, Ash.
Oh, would it? I'm sorry.
I forgive you. So when I say X, I am, of course, talking about the social media app formerly known as Twitter. And I joined it in 2007. And I absolutely loved it for a really long time. And I remember the community of it and how great it was when it first started. And then I like Cory Doctorow's word to describe what happens to these things, which is enshittification. I think I might have just made us PG again.
Yeah. Oh, that can be bleeped though, can't it?
Yeah.
But it doesn't make sense to remove the word, does it?
And I've got a kind of funny relationship with Twitter over more recent years because I've had this whole thing of my username.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure I've recounted previously in these pages. It's not really pages, is it? In these episodes. But for those who haven't been paying attention, obviously go back and listen to them again. But I'll tell you anyway. My username is my initials, which is IDS. I've had a lot of trouble with a lot of Germans who think that the fact that at IDS spells AIDS is the funniest thing they've ever heard, because what could be more hilarious than a deadly disease?
Yeah.
And then I had Ian Duncan Smith, who's a British politician, while he was in charge of the Department for Work and Pensions, which basically means welfare, every time he did anything, armies of people on Twitter would condemn me roundly as a murderer of vulnerable people. So there was that. So I had a lot of traffic from that. And then there's the Indiana Daily Student, which is a newspaper There's the Institute of Development Studies. And many, many more.
Yeah.
All of whom I would receive mentions for because people didn't really pay attention to the photo of the beardy person that would come up while they, while they were typing it. So that kind of took the shine off Twitter, honestly, for me, maybe 5 or 6 years ago. But of course, now Elon Musk has come on onto the scene and made it into X. And I feel like it's killed it. And it's got nothing left of what I loved about it in 2007, 2008. Yeah. Not even a trace.
So what did you love about it?
I loved talking to people that I'd not met and engaging with them on the basis of them being nice people who weren't trying to get something out of me by the interaction. And, you know, I met people on there. A lot of my IBM colleagues joined it very early on.
Right, okay.
You know, we did a lot with it. And actually, it was fantastic. And I remember really being delighted with it. And that kind of the tail end of that remained for a long time. But it was never, you know, the more it became, you know, we have to make money, we've got to run ads, we've got to do all these different things. You know, the third-party clients thing where there was some really amazing third-party Twitter client innovation that was shut off suddenly for commercial reasons. All of that kind of stuff just eroded it. But the Elon Musk takeover and change to X has really, really killed it for me. I'm curious what your relationship to Twitter now is.
So I used to... I was a reasonably heavy user of Twitter.
Yeah.
I used it a lot going to conferences, testing and development conferences and taking pictures and cheering speakers on and, you know, posting profound things that they'd said, that type of thing.
Yeah.
And it actually became a bit of a sort of chronicle of testing conference travels, if you know what I mean, where there would be like a sudden burst of activity because I'd be watching talks that I was enjoying and posting pictures and going around nice cities with other people from the testing community and having a nice time. And it was all, really enjoyed using it for that. But then once the like third party apps started getting, you know, they started charging for API access. And then like the death of it for me was TweetDeck. So I used to really, really like using TweetDeck. I had a few Twitter accounts, especially for a conference that I was involved in as well. And you could schedule and you could do all the cool stuff with TweetDeck. But then once access to that was behind the paywall, it just, at that point I was sort of faced with a choice. It's like, well, the tool that you enjoy using is gone. A lot of the people who I previously engaged with were gone. And it was just like, well, the last reason then was gone to hang around. So once TweetDeck went behind the paywall, I then closed down my account, got the archive out, put it somewhere safe, relatively safe until that company closes down probably. And then that's been it really. I've not really considered it, looked back, thought about it too much.
You should put your archive onto the Internet Archive.
Yeah.
They let you do that with Twitter archives, and then you can see all those old conference tweets will become searchable and available again.
Yeah.
I think that's a really good thing, which I haven't done either. But I do think it's a great idea.
I think Twitter was always interesting to me because it was full of, there was lots of different sort of communities in there, because based on the model of how you would, you know, you would have followings and be a follower, it was easy to have a not a closed community, obviously, because anyone could look in, but my Twitter feed became mostly around, you know, the topics that I use Twitter for, so conferences, testing, development, all those things, rather than anything else. So I think it was interesting in that communities formed, but it was always quite sort of relatively loose and organic, which is a really interesting idea, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And it was revolutionary when it came out.
Yeah.
When it first started, it was SMS messages. That's why they had the 140-character limit.
Yeah.
Flipping heck. I'm showing my age now.
But I always remember sitting and writing a tweet and then it's going, I was like, this is going to be way more than 140 characters. And having to, like, you know, make it much terser and make my language much cleaner. And I thought I was quite enjoyed that process.
It's a good discipline there, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Then I think it went to 280. And then now I think it's just like, if you pay, it can be anything. And it's just like, from a point of view of, I don't want to just hang on to what it was, but it just doesn't have anything that's sufficiently different to anywhere else now, which, you know, to make it more interesting.
Well, a lot of people have left it as well.
Yeah.
And the communities that were on it, all linked together by following each other, have kind of gone with that. And so you had a big community of testers that was there.
Yeah.
But where have they gone now? I mean, are you looking at any of the other sort of replacement platforms, which I think will be interesting to kind of do a little canter through those. But have you moved to any of those?
So I haven't moved to anywhere. Weirdly enough now, LinkedIn is my sole social
feed. That's very disappointing.
It is very disappointing. And if you would have asked me that a few years ago, I would have thought that you were mad to suggest that I would end up in that situation. But here we are.
Well, I have always liked to do the work, you know, and make sure that on average we're on some social media platforms. So I've actually gone on to loads of them. So I'm on Mastodon, which is just, what a hilarious name. And Blue Sky and Threads.
What are tweets called? Are they called Toots?
They're called Toots.
Of course.
Of course.
Have they used any other, like, sort of, you know, mammoth or an elephant?
There are lots.
Is there something called is your profile called a trunk or something like that?
All the third party clients are all called things. My favourite on iPhone is called Ivory. And that's on the Mac.
Right. Okay.
And on the iPhone. And that is a fabulous client. Really, really good. And it's by Tapbots,
right,
who did Tweetbot back in the day. And it is that, I think, has really pushed me into Mastodon is my favourite.
Yeah.
It's interesting because people have rebelled against the demise of, it's not really a demise, is it? But whatever it is, people have rebelled against what happened to Twitter in different ways. But one of the interesting things is the way that, the way with Mastodon anyway, is that it's a federated system.
Yeah.
So nobody really owns it. There's no billionaire in the picture for it. And so anyone can run a Mastodon server. You just have to, and you know, you can be banned from them as well.
Yeah.
So if I run a Mastodon server, I can decide whether I want to have toots messages from your server on my, be visible in my server.
Yeah.
And what's one thing that did make me kind of chortle a bit was that the what's his name, Mossieri, the Instagram leader of Facebook, who is one of the, may have been one of the co-founders of Instagram originally, I can't remember, but he's in charge of their offering, which is Threads, which I'm also on. But one thing that they said was their plan was to federate Threads into the Mastodon sort of multiverse. I think there is a word beginning with multi that they have coined. But the Fediverse, that's what they call it. They were going to federate Threads into the Fediverse. And the amount of people who are like, no, we're not allowing that. And you're sort of thinking, but I thought the whole point of this was it was open. Well, that's too open.
Yeah.
We don't want messages from Facebook users. I mean, or Instagram users, that would be the worst.
Yeah. It's interesting how the billionaire-owned ones are the ones that said, we'll do federation, but we'll do it later.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas, like, Mastodon was like, no, it needs to be federated because that was the point.
Yeah.
Whereas the billionaire-owned ones aren't. They're not doing that. Or at least they've paid lip service to it to say, yeah, we'll do that later. That sounds really important. Yeah. Just, you know, get some advertisers in.
Well, I mean, I think Jack Dorsey, who's started one called Blue Sky, one thing that they've done is they are going to federate it, they say, but not using one of the protocols that already exist. And they feel that the world needs another,
of course,
protocol for doing that, which is called the AT protocol.
What does AT stand for?
I'm going to not speculate. But
armored transport.
Armored transport, yes, probably. I think one of the things they were going to do more fundamentally was encryption and message signing and stuff would be part of it. I wonder if there's a sort of end-to-end encryption something in there, maybe, which is quite hard problem in federated environments.
Yeah.
But they... so they don't think that ActivityPub and the various other... ActivityPub is the protocol that Mastodon uses and that Threads intends to federate with. They didn't go for that. They just...
So they decided to do
a different one. Yeah.
I'll tell you what, let's just write our own compiler.
So, yeah.
You know, that's always the best idea, I find.
Well, it's one of those things that's always harder than you think. But actually, if you're a billionaire, maybe it's just a matter of finding smart people and paying them a lot of money.
Getting them to do it instead.
Well, yeah.
And then feeling smart.
Possibly. I'm not speaking for the internal
workings
of Jack Dorsey's brain. But I have slightly more liking for him than I've got for either Zuckerberg or Musk.
Mm. Yeah. It's a tough call, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. But I do think I find these platforms interesting in their own ways. And Threads is interesting, because although it's basically just imports your Instagram network into it, so it's just kind of, oh, okay. So this is just these people, but with fewer photographs or silly videos.
Instagram without the media. Amazing.
Well, with less media. And then, but Blue Sky I quite like.
Hmm.
And Mastodon, I think, is my favourite.
Yeah.
And I think the key with Mastodon has been the Ivory client. I think that having that client, which is so like Tweetbot, that you just kind of forget you're in a different kind of environment, actually. And the other thing is where have the communities that are important to you or me gone to? So are all the testers now on one of these?
I think they're on Mastodon.
I was about to bet that they were.
Yeah. Yeah,
because of their anarchistic streaks that they all have, apparently. I was going to bet that, and I it would be interesting, because another thing that is seen in Mastodon is servers that have sprung up around those communities. Yeah. So some people who care about a particular idea maybe have made their own server, and they're hosting. And there's geographic servers, and then Mastodon.social is the biggest one, which is the one that's the guy who is kind of the lead of the development project is kind of his one. But I do find myself wanting to find the people that I followed on Twitter.
Bring back the old times.
Yes. Especially Fesshole, was my guilty pleasure.
Let's get the gang back together again.
Yes. Yes, let's do that.
Talk about embarrassing confessions.
Yes. Well, maybe not. probably edit it out of this episode as well.
Yeah. So one thing you're talking about, like, the not the demise of X, because it's not a demise, is it? Or the diminishing of.
Yes.
So what... From the world of video gaming, I often remind myself that actually, like, 90% of video gamers play, like, Call of Duty and play Candy Crush on their mobiles. So I search for, you know, bespoke and interesting and, you know, different, play all kinds of different types of video games. But that's not how the world is shaped, generally. It's just like, you know, what I want.
Yeah.
So probably a lot of people are still continuing to use X in whatever way that they, you know, decided to do so in the past. Or same with Facebook as well. I mean, I don't really recognise Facebook at all. I looked at someone's Facebook feed the other day. They showed me it, and I was like, where are the people that you know? They just don't exist on there anymore. It's just another algorithm based.
Yes.
You know, here's a, you know, a cat video. Here's an advert. It's just another one of those.
Yeah. It's these algorithmic feeds.
Mm.
There's something that I think they would be great if they were in service of the user.
Yeah.
But they aren't.
Yeah. Yeah. So even like my running application, Strava, tries to serve me like algorithmic content. I'm like, no, just show me all the people that I follow, the runs that they go on, and put them in a big list, starting from the latest one first, please, every time I open the app. It's like, it's not too hard.
No.
So back to Threads. One thing, interesting thing I picked out in your notes was they talked about federation in the guise of, if you were deplatformed, you could then take your community elsewhere.
Yeah.
Which I thought was like, what, like an astonishing statement.
And that was so, from Mr. Mossieri, the boss of it.
Yeah. So I was like, what an absolutely astonishing statement. So basically, say if you, I don't know, were involved in some kind of scandal, or, you know, turns out that many moons ago you sent a bunch of racist, sexist tweets or whatever it was. You could then just say, right, okay, well, I'm federating myself out of here because you've deplatformed me. Then I'm going to get on the Federation Ferris wheel and just federate myself somewhere else and then just take everybody with me. I was like, what a statement that is. Like, it's almost like the complete abdication of saying that, you know, I need to monitor the content or...
Well, they do need to monitor the content. Mm. In fact, I think that's one of the big challenges that sort of Mastodon has been facing, is who does that?
Yeah.
You know, and then you read about, oh, there's this far right Mastodon server over there that's got all these racist comments or something on it. And so the ban lists, you know, the block lists. So on Mastodon, you can block entire servers.
Right.
Personally.
Yeah.
So you can say, oh, I don't like, you know, I don't like the ethos of this, the people on here. I don't want to ever see anything from them.
Yeah.
But obviously the big thing is server admins deciding to block other servers.
Yeah.
And there is a lot of, I think there's a fair bit of that.
Yeah, because in theory you could be deplatformed, spin off your federated server and build an absolute cesspool somewhere with and you would be able to self-regulate and self check your own content.
It's an open source thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
You're basically using an open source tool to build a private community over there where you can all just stew in your festering swamp of hatred.
Yeah.
And maybe federate with other people so you can stew in some other festering swamps of hatred.
Yeah, absolutely.
All of which may be unconnected to the main sort of Mastodon network or connected to it in very loose or very indirect ways.
Mm. I guess Mastodon would probably be the one that I would gravitate towards because I dislike the idea of, like, to me, obviously, Threads is too deeply associated with
Meta,
although I can't escape from WhatsApp either because of family.
I know, I'm the same.
Yeah, so...
I haven't escaped from any of it, actually. I can't... I can't even, there's no progress to report on getting away from it.
Yeah. And then Blue Sky, I don't know, Dorsey feels like part of the old guard to me and will continue to make the same mistakes.
Do you think? Maybe he might not.
Because, maybe he might not. But
I mean, this federation protocol does seem to be real.
Yeah.
And, you know, public.
Yeah.
So maybe when that starts opening up, he will take more of a back seat. I mean, I haven't thought that Blue Sky, when I've been on it, is objectionable. I'm not. The thing about it is that, yes, it's owned by a billionaire, but actually he did all right at owning Twitter. It was selling Twitter that was the problem. He sold it to other people who then have ultimately broken it.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm kind of sceptical, but least worst.
Least worst. And yeah, then Mastodon, because appeals to my values, I think, in terms of...
Yeah.
And then...
I'm with you on that.
And then that possibly some of the old crowd hang out on there, talk about testing, go to conferences, post nice pictures of people, supportive pictures.
Toots.
Doing talks. Toots. So I think that this, it'd probably be that. But also, kind of over the years, I've assessed the value of social media, like, to me, versus the amount of time that could be put into it. And I've found it, my desire to use it is less than a year.
Yeah, and mine is too. Yeah. I don't spend a tremendous amount of time on these things.
Yeah.
Compared to the time I sometimes waste on Instagram reels, which in the TikTok style, just you disappear and then you come out at the end thinking, oh my goodness, it's evening, but I've only just woken up.
So LinkedIn doesn't have the same... it feels like your posts on LinkedIn... It's difficult to post a picture of someone on a stage and say, they've just said this thing, go at whoever at this conference. Because it feels less like throwaway. Like, you know, on Twitter, obviously, they would the posts like that would scroll past on your feed and then they would be gone. And they would feel more, it's more of a timely thing than a, you know, timeless thing. I don't know if I'm expressing myself quite right, but.
I know what you mean. And I feel like with LinkedIn, there's a huge pressure to be business.
Yeah.
You know, and there's all these people writing all these oceans of crap about things that they claim to know more than they actually do.
Oh, yeah. Those prompts, I keep getting invited to them. It's like, you know, you're trying to hire a product marketing specialist. What do you look for? I have no idea.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you do have a long history of hiring product marketing. Oh, no, wait. You've never hired a product marketing specialist.
I'm just like, okay, fine.
Since I became, I wrote on there that I'm the CTO of a company, I get so many people connecting with me to sell me things. And I just think, oh, this person wants to be my friend. No, they don't. They want to have a quick call with me so to discuss the company's something, normally overseas development team needs or something.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not – there's no joy about LinkedIn for me. It's just – it's a necessary evil. Yeah. Whereas Mastodon I actually sometimes enjoy, especially because of Ivory. I know I keep going on about it, but it's such a great client.
But again, so I used to use TweetDeck, and it was one of my main reasons for sticking with Twitter, because I could use lists, I could use scheduling, DMs were presented better, and I just thought it was a better way to use it. And it does influence your ability, your decision to stay or go, I think.
Yeah, it does.
So...
the right client.
Yeah.
That's why I'm barely on Reddit anymore, because they got rid of Apollo, which was the Reddit client I used was just amazing.
Yeah.
And it was very disappointing. Because actually what they wanted to, this is a diversion again, but what they wanted to do was monetize the AI people who were just stealing all the content through their API and using it to train language models. But actually, and it seemed secondary that they were just destroying all these third-party clients that people loved. You know, it wasn't even as though it was just, anyway, great shame, but never mind.
Yeah, it's almost like the more you do that, then the less content you'll have to sell to the various AI companies who are schlepping up Reddit's data.
Yes, yeah.
So, I guess it's just that kind of sort of tunnel vision around how to monetize. I hate that word.
How to enshittificate.
Yeah, exactly. That's basically, but that's what happens, isn't it?
It is, yes.
You just make it worse than you...
Yeah, I mean, as soon as Reddit announced us doing an IPO, which they're just doing right about now, you know, you just know, oh, things are going to get worse.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know they're trying. They're just a team of people trying to do stuff. But, yeah.
Yeah.
So we should expect your Mastodon then. I'm looking forward to following you on it.
I won't join any servers you're in, Ian. Don't you worry about that.
Yes.
I'll warn them.
I don't want to be a member of a club that would have me for a member.
Yeah, exactly. Groucho
Marx.
Yeah.
Well, I hope that was a more interesting thing than it might have appeared when I first wrote it down. I was kind of
Well, given it was just one letter from the alphabet, I was just well.
No, it's not from alphabet.
Hey, there you go.
Oh, you see what I did there? In the show notes, we'll put links to all these things and our accounts on them, such as they might be, so you can follow us. Maybe we should create a What a Lot of Things Mastodon account, because at the moment we're just on LinkedIn, which I've just disrespected heavily.
Not really walking the walk there.
No. Well, the thing is, we haven't walked the walk anyway, because we created a LinkedIn group for it, didn't we?
Yeah.
And then roundly ignored it. We promoted it a bit, but I don't think I've ever posted. Have you ever posted in it?
No. It needs some activity.
From someone?
Yeah.
From our social media manager. Who's that?
You.
I think it's just a vacant...
vacant position.
Position. Anybody who wants to be our social media manager, just let us know. Although mostly it will be explaining the long delays between our episodes and...
just holding messages.
Yeah. Just waiting 2 years for us to get round to it again. Yes. Trying to institute deadlines without Ash realising that they're...
they're I know all the different synonyms, though. So,
all the tricks.
So, yes. I've sat with enough product people asking me for quotes, estimates, timelines... and all the other
bless
ways.
Their cotton socks.
Yeah, exactly.
They're very often lovely people.
Very often, but in the end, that's what they want. They want a ballpark.
How long will it take?
I know what a ballpark is.
Yes, it's a park with a ball in it. I don't own one to give you. Fantastic. So we talked at the beginning about announcements, but I don't think we haven't really got any, have we?
What, for the What a Lot of Things podcast?
Yes.
No.
I don't feel empowered to make other kinds of announcements.
But that's okay. Not everything has to have an announcement.
But how will people know we're at the end? It will just stop.
Well, we'll just say, just say goodbye.
Yeah, fair enough, I suppose.
Yeah. We don't have to fill... We've talked about the LinkedIn group.
But we're only on...
And that's the only thing that we've got.
We're only on 2,258 bars.
Yeah, exactly. Lifetime count of bars.
Yeah, so, that's a very long song.
It is.
Even at 120 BPM, it's a long song.
So yeah, I don't think we need to make further announcements.
I'm trying really hard to think of one. It's not working.
No.
Okay. I surrender to the inevitable.
Surrender to the inevitable need to say goodbye.
It's goodbye from me. And it's goodbye from him.
Yeah.
Or some such.
Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.
That was the longest goodbye.
Oh, no. Now we're back on films.
Oh, yeah.